Obituary.
Balthazar Ushka, the world's last known harvester of glacial ice, died on October 11th, aged 80.
Sometime in 1822, Simon Bolivar, the great liberator of Latin America, fell into a delirium. He dreamt he had climbed the slopes of Mount Chimborazo, Ecuador's highest peak, in the tracks of Alexander von Humboldt. But Humboldt, in 1802, had not reached the top. No human foot had ever trodden the ice-white hair of Chimborazo, Bolivar wrote, or blemished the diamond crown placed there by eternity. He dared to. At the top, he was possessed by the god of Colombia and met Time, a bent old man. Time, having first scorned Bolivar as nothing, then showed him the secrets of the universe. When he had this vision, Bolivar was staying in Riobamba, just below the great mountain, and it was from a village nearby, usually on Thursdays and Fridays, that Balthazar Ushka would set out from his house to climb it too. In the dawn light, after a hunk of bread and a bowl of coffee, he would get his donkeys ready. An early start was important before the sun began to melt the snow. Leaving behind the washing line and the dogs stretched in the dirt, he too would make for the crystal peak of Chimborazo. Like Bolivar, he felt he was approaching a holy place. When measured from the centre of the earth, not sea level, Chimborazo's summit was the point nearest the sun. Sun power, he knew, was in the ice. His journey began with a prayer to Taita, Father Chimborazo, to guard the journey, preserve him from falling rocks, see he didn't get too tired, and guide him home again. For all his working life, Taita had looked after him. It was always cold on the mountain, the domain of snow and sleet, but he seldom wore more than his scarlet poncho over a light jumper, everyday trousers, a black felt Ecuadorian hat, and rubber boots. No gloves. His work would keep him warm. So would his love for it, which gave him a perpetual smile. First, he had to ride, walk, and climb 16 steep, rocky miles to the ice mine. It took several hours. There, he had to clear away a layer of dirt, rocks, and ash about half a metre thick. Underneath lay the glacier, compacted, ancient ice, still shining like diamond. Chimborazo was crowned with 17 glaciers, bright in their upper reaches and covered with permanent snow. But his work lay lower down. Right here, wielding the ice pick, he could open up the mountain. His parents had been there before him, both father and mother. Back in those days, there would be 40 or so people working in the ice mine. Women, too, though Chimborazo was not necessarily safe for them. Local legend said that if a girl went up the mountain alone, she would get pregnant, and her child would be born with a shock of ice-white hair. His father's hair had been like that, so his obvious career was ice-cutting. It was no shame. The villagers of the area depended on Chimborazo both for water and for ice, too, to preserve their food before refrigeration arrived. The icemen, hileros, were essential and were heroes. At 15, never having bothered with school, Balthazar joined them. He had to wait until that age to be strong enough. At 4,500 metres, the air was thin. Cutting a huge block from the glacier required a deep, sharp breath before every swing of the pick. He worked in a shower of ice, each shard catching the light. This ice was special. Factory ice, used everywhere now, was dull and grey. Fresh mountain ice glittered and was packed with gleaming bubbles of air. Factory ice had chlorine in it, but here was real ice, sweet and delicious, like mineral water. It cured hangovers and fevers and was full of vitamins for bones. Apart from breaking his foot once, he had never hurt any bone on Chimborazo. He could work until God took him. Once the block he was cutting had fallen, he chopped it with his ice axe into 6 small ones. 6 were all his 3 donkeys could carry down the mountain. Each block, parcelled up in dry grass and roped on pannier style, weighed between 30 and 45 kilograms, as much as he could lift. Plucking 6 thick bunches of grass from the pahanal, the rough, flat fields at the foot of Chimborazo, was a job he did on his way up. It took an hour to get enough, and he stuffed more in his boots instead of socks. This straw, woven into clumsy mats, stopped the blocks from melting almost completely. Walking behind his donkeys now, they went back down. For all these hours of toil, he got very little. Each grass-swathed block of ice, toted through Riobamba on his back, earned him only $5 at the market. 2 traditional cafes were his main customers. They used his ice in fruit shakes and would treat him to his favourite, pink and frothy, after the sale. At Ugo's El Punto Máximo del Sabor, he had dealt with the lovely Rosa for more than 55 years. Everyone around town, when given a choice, could taste the difference, but it was the dull, chlorinated stuff they bought in bags from the supermarket. So he was still very poor. Luckily, he also kept sheep and grew potatoes. For a while, he earned extra cash from tourists who came especially to watch him cutting ice, but when he found that the travel companies were charging them $200 a day, he kept his distance. Film crews visited too, because he was now famous. All this paid for 2 new front teeth to replace his rotten ones. The authorities in Guano, a neighbouring town, made a fuss of him, even putting a statue of him in the museum. It was larger and handsomer than he was and made him laugh. He was proud to cut ice, but knew he was the last. There were so many better, easier jobs. Another factor counted too. The weather on the mountain was now only a little bit cold. He could grow potatoes higher up the slopes if he cared to do that as he got older, but this meant that the ice mass was retreating, getting ever harder to reach. It was also more dangerous to make the climb, as the ice that bound the rocks together increasingly melted and let them loose. Above Riobamba, Chimborazo's shape was changing. The gods no longer slept as soundly as before.